That's the only one right now. Chris Jackson, the wide receivers coach contract is up very soon, so we'll see about him. But yeah, well,
normally they're. I mean, well, I'm not. Who knows nowadays? I was going to say normally they don't wait till you know the end of the contract. Normally they'll give you that time to go find a job, you know, because most of those contracts are June to Junes, you know, most of them. So, I mean, it's just it's not right to keep a guy through like, you know, the hiring period. If you're going to fire him, you know, it's just not. But who knows these days? I mean,
yeah,
this is weird. This is a very weird and strange time in college football.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Drew, you definitely should be proud because I see guys clocking in to the Panini Senior Bowl left and right. And it's big name after big name. Again, congratulations. I know it feels good to see everything finally coming together. Talk about the latest group of guys that have committed to playing the game.
Gosh, it's hard because it's been about probably 25 to 30 in the last day and a half. The biggest one for me is David Bailey, you know. But I can tell you the shortest invite and quickest yes was TJ Parker. He was like, you don't even have to finish. He's like, I'm in, you know. And guys that understand, you know, how valuable this is to their draft stock and to prove that they're different and maybe move them 7 or 8 slots, maybe even 20. I mean, those are the ones that are smart. It's the agents that go, yeah, I've been getting first round grades. Yeah, you've been getting some damn area scouts you've been talking to. It has no idea what the hell the rest of the country is, you know. I mean – and again, I can bitch and complain about them, you know, but I got to deal with them. But there are some that are just half retarded. Excuse my not being PC, but it's true, you know. And it's like, I'm going, guess what? I mean, whoever you're talking to, I mean, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And we used to always say it this way. It was like when I was an area scout, I would go like, hey, I think this guy's a first rounder. Well, and I'd bring him back, and after the board was set, he was like a third rounder because there was 10 guys that were better than him because I didn't see the country. But then when I saw the country and when I set the vertical board, just like I do here, right, I know where the guys are going to fall. I know where they're placed. And I had a friend of mine that I've known 30 years, and he's a high, high-profile agent. And he says, well, we think he's the one. I said, well, then you're damn stupid. I said, because he is not. I said, he might get in the back end of the first if he comes down here and performs against the best in the country. But if he doesn't, I bet you he isn't a first. And I was like, and I said, I would love to bet you a fine timepiece on it. You know, that's how confident I am about where I think guys, I mean, because I can see the whole board. I can see the whole country. I can see all the numbers. And, you know, for guys to take the word of a guy that sees 30 schools and, you know, like, oh, we think he's a first. Okay. Well, you're going to lose money on that one because, you know, the difference, I think I told you this, from the top of the third to the bottom of the top of the third to the 32 picks to the bottom of the first, right, is $11.9 million in a 4-year contract. That's the difference. Okay. Well, unless you're the first pick, okay, unless you're the first pick, I think you're playing this game. I really do. I mean, do you think that Abdul Carter was a 10th pick last year? He's a 10th pick, right?
Yeah.
He came down here. You think he might have been the 5th pick?
Possibly.
Maybe. Right? Maybe. You know, because, I mean, some of these dudes, and I told you this, and you laugh like hell, and I have to change it just a little bit, right? Most of these dudes are playing against guys that are going to be working at damn FedEx next week. Right? These guys are playing against real dudes. I mean, just the offensive line alone. I mean, we got, I mean, 10 guys already committed. You know, we're going to have over, like, I think it's 18, I think we're going with, if I remember right. I can't even remember what the number is. Yeah, it's like 13, 14 inside guys and 13 tackles. Okay. We're already 10 and 10. Already, and they're high draft choices. So why wouldn't you come here? Yeah. I mean, gosh, I'm trying to remember all the dudes. you know, the two juicy nose tackles a guy, okay, is, and I think you know the nickname, Big Citrus, Dominic Orange from Iowa State, right?
Yeah.
And Chris McClellan, right? I mean, I'll say this in the nicest way. They got a little sexy fat man to them, okay? And they got a little bit of pass rush to them, which most big nose tackles are really just, we call them plug rushers or just push the pocket guys. These guys got a little bit of, like, a little bit of sexy to them. And they won't be on the same damn team, I can promise you that, because both of them about 340 and about 360.
Man. You know?
So I'm putting two nose tackles separate from each other. I'm not putting them on the same damn team because they'll be eating two every day. You know what I mean by that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like Namon says in the chat, yeah, Sweat went to the Senior Bowl. And I remember him going to the Senior Bowl, and it changed the perspective. And, you know, unfortunately, some off-the-field stuff maybe hurt his draft stock a little bit. But we remember the push he got from that of, oh, this guy's legit scary. And you're seeing him do it where you're right. Sometimes we don't see it. And that's my question is, you know, we're looking now. We have two group of five teams in the playoffs. We have, you know, maybe some teams that people haven't seen as much because a lot of people, I watch more SEC than I watch of anything else because that's what we cover. Like out of who you're looking at, who you've got on your board, who are some of the players that we're going to see the next couple of days here in the playoffs that you look at and go, maybe people don't realize that this dude is a dude.
Gosh, I mean, that's kind of hard just because, I mean, I think a lot of those guys in the playoff games, I mean, Tulane has some really good players, but
yeah,
they don't have anybody worthy of my game this year.
Okay.
You know, James Madison has really good players, but just not worthy of the game here. And here's the thing. There was probably only 20 to 23 to 24, you know, guys that we evaluated outside of P4.
Yeah.
You know, so because those schools are already doing our job for them and for the NFL, they're poaching those guys and bringing them up.
That's, I mean, true.
Like,
that's true.
You know, like Elijah Surratt. I mean, like from St. Francis to flipping James Madison to Indiana, right? I mean, the Jamari Taylor kid that we invited from Virginia, he was at North Carolina Central last year. I mean, see, those guys would have maybe been at James Madison before and maybe been at, you know, North Carolina Central, but they're not anymore. They're already pulled up. So it makes the job, you know, easier for the NFL and for us. It really does. You know, the impactful guys, I mean, gosh, Miami alone, I mean, on defense, I mean, Reuben Bain, Mesidor, Moten, Keontae Scott, Jacoby Thomas, you know, A&M, Cassius Howell, you know, I mean, three of their offensive linemen. I mean, one of them's already accepted. I mean, we got invites for three of them. The two receivers are big timers. One can't come out, one can, you know, Le'Veon Moss. I mean, took the invite. By the time January 31st rolls around, he'll probably be pretty damn healthy. Oklahoma. R. Thomas is a really good edge rusher. We got a commitment from Grayson, the inside tackle, defensive tackle there. We've got three invites. Well, they just got their invites yesterday at Oklahoma. So we put five out there. You know, Alabama, everybody's accepted but one dude at Alabama, and I'm waiting on him, okay? And you know who that is?
Who's that?
Proctor, okay?
That would have been my guess, but I didn't want to call him out without knowing.
Waiting on one dude. Now, if he thinks he's a top 10 pick, he needs to bring his ass over here and prove it because his tape ain't for a top 10 pick. It's not.
No.
It's not.
No, he's gotten a lot of awards this year that – maybe we're a bit questionable for what his play on the field was versus what, you know, years past have been. Yeah. So I'm with you. I think if he goes there and shows that he's still that guy, then it changes a lot of people and go, oh yeah, you know, we saw it. We know what he is.
Well, here's what happens. And you've been here. We're talking about how it actually builds the stock and everything else. If they play well, there's also been a lot of dudes came down here and got exposed because they weren't good enough to play against this level of player. And they may have been really, really productive, you know, where they were. But some of them have been exposed. And you kind of go, oof. Yeah, I really didn't believe he could run. And guess what? He showed me he couldn't, you know. So it's kind of goes both ways. So I think some guys kind of think of this as, you know, it's a great opportunity, but I think some of them are a little bit afraid of it because this is the 140 best dudes in the country, bottom line. And excuse my grammar, it ain't even close, okay, to the other one. Not even close. I mean, everybody knows it, you know? So I always say premier game, always has been, always will be.
Yeah. Yeah. So those guys who are afraid of it, I don't want them on my team no damn way. So, hey, y'all stay at home. We're speaking with Drew Fabianich, Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl. Drew, the games this weekend, college football playoffs, which games are you most looking forward to? Obviously, you got tomorrow night, Bama and Oklahoma, and then the game at noon the next day with A&M and Miami. I'm guessing only those two games?
Only two games. Yeah, I'll watch the other ones, but I'm going to tell you what now. I mean, God bless James Madison. Whew. That could get really ugly now. I mean, that could get really ugly, you know. And, you know, Tulane, it's hard to beat a team twice in the NFL. It's a little bit easier to beat a team twice, you know, when you're overmatched. And, you know, and again, Ole Miss should win it because they're more talented, bottom line. But Tulane's a good, really good football team. And John did a great job coaching them. I mean, but, you know, sometimes you're just overmatched. And guess what? You know, my dad used to say, oh, yeah, coaching takes over. And I was like, no. I was like, talent takes over at the end of games. I was like, you can coach your ass off and it doesn't matter. Talent eventually takes over. So I got asked this on, you know, another show, and it said, which one do you go to? I said, I'm going to A&M because I think that's going to be the best one of all. I mean, that's going to be a battle up front. I mean, that's strength on strength, that group is. Yeah, that game is. So
yeah, I don't know why they put that game at 11 a.m.
yeah, I don't know either. I guess maybe they wanted ratings throughout the day, but I mean, I was like, yeah, I don't know about that one. But maybe they wanted to get a little bit more attention on. Maybe they thought the lower viewership maybe later, just maybe.
That'd be my guess.
And
speaking of, go ahead.
And I don't know about. I mean, I'll tell you what. I think Alabama, you know, might pull that one off. You know, because, you know, the bag of tricks isn't going to be so big now with Venables. You know what I mean? I mean, he's going to have probably three or four more exotics, you know, that they haven't seen. But it's not like they're not going to be prepared for all the other things that he throws at you. So I'm kind of thinking Alabama, but, you know, God, I wish they ran the ball better.
Yeah, I saw the stat yesterday that was Alabama hasn't lost to the same opponent twice in the same season since 1893.
Yeah.
So it'd be historic if they did it. lost twice.
And Oklahoma's talented. They are.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, but again, it was one play made the difference in that game last year. I mean, the previous game, one play. That was it. So go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Zay.
No, you're good. You're good. As far as the Miami A&M game goes, cause all I've heard on why people are picking A&M over Miami, well, obviously there's the home field advantage, but the coaching matchup, you know, a lot of people have Mike Elko here and Mario Cristobal down here. And I don't think it's that big. I mean, coaches have messed up before. I think Mario Cristobal, especially when it comes to ball control at the end of the game, has struggled at times. But I think Miami could go in there and, for some folks, shock the world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see that. I mean, and again, I know everybody's raving about Elko's, you know, as a defensive coach and head coach, and he's done a really, really good job. But Mario's done a good job down there too now. And you got to realize there was a time, I'm going to say the last decade before him, Miami wasn't very good. I mean, the whole persona went away for a while, you know, and some dudes got fired down there pretty quickly, right? I mean, and they weren't the Miami Hurricanes of old. Now they're the Miami Hurricanes of old, and they can run the ball, they can throw it, and they play really good defense. And, you know, again, if you can play really good defense and you can run the ball, you got a chance. I mean, it's complementary football. I mean, play field position. Parcells always used to say this, you know, you play field position football, right? You control the clock, right? And have a chance to win the game with 4 minutes to go. That's all you want, right? It's all you want. So I mean, it's true. It happens. Play field position football, right? Control the clock,
yeah.
Right? Control the time possession. And then you got a chance to win it 4 minutes left if you can do that. So makes a hell of a lot of sense. And they can do that, but A&M can too. But A&M also got beat at Texas. So can't tell me that's not in their mind too.
Right.
Can't tell me that. Can't tell me
that. Yeah. They've got the blueprint to try and slow down Marcel Reed right now because he did not look like the guy he looked like earlier in the season. It is weird when we look back at that Ole Miss Tulane game as well. The coaching in that game is going to be a bit off the wall. Lane Kiffin no longer there. And then for John Summerall, he's between two jobs right now and losing most of his good players, right? Or a lot of his good players, not most, but a lot of his good players right now to the portal. So we keep getting reports of more and more guys jumping in. So we know that's weird, but as somebody who gets to work with these guys and see them when they come to the Senior Bowl, have you had examples of guys coming in where you're shocked at the lack of coaching that they may have received, whether it's a guy who's transferred and only spent a year in a program or just an athletic freak where you're like, how are you not better than you are?
You know, I mean, there's always a lot of whys. And, you know, you got to figure out the whys, you know, to do that. And I don't know if it is the transfer piece of it. You know, I got asked if, you know, if scouts would in the league would actually like fault the quarterback for transferring four times. I was like, not anymore. I mean, because it's about one damn thing. And that's it. It's about the money. I mean, and the biggest problem, it's normally not the kid. Normally it's the parents. Yeah. And they always say, oh, well, no, it's not about the money. As soon as they said that to me, I went, yep, it's about the money. Here we go. You know, and who's going to be the highest bidder? Here we go. I mean, so again, I don't think, put it this way, the biggest problem in college football is not preparing a quarterback for the NFL, because 95% of the teams don't manage a game with the quarterback the way the NFL does. You'd be surprised how many quarterbacks cannot even ID a mic and change a protection or even know where their hots are when, you know, when there's four strong or four weak. They have no clue. Okay. And then all of a sudden you walk into a West Coast offense, which has three sentences for a damn play, and they're getting two signals in from the sideline and they're running the play. I mean, they don't prepare the quarterback for what they're getting into. Greatest clip I saw was Chris Sims trying to verbalize John Gruden's offensive plays. Oh my God. And Chris Sims is a smart dude.
I remember that.
He's a smart dude. And he couldn't get it right. Couldn't. And because they won such a huge play sheet that in the NFL, you can't practice 400 plays. You can't. But there are 400 plays on a John Gruden play sheet, right? Well, he's telling every damn son of a bitch what to do on that damn call because they can't practice those enough to actually, you know, rep them all. Can't. There's no time because your practice is about an hour and 45 minutes in the NFL every day. That's it. You know, so how are you going to rep 400 snaps? You know, can't. So that's the biggest issue of it's not coaching. It's systematic because whatever system they're in doesn't prepare them for it. I mean, Jimbo Fisher asked me, he says, how many quarterbacks do you think can run the line of scrimmage? That's what we used to call it, can run the line of scrimmage, right? I said, maybe three out of the 12 guys that I got on my list. Maybe three. I know it's two, but it's maybe three. Now, those other guys, they go into the NFL. Whew. Want to talk about learning curve? Wow. I mean, think about throwing a mouthful out, right? Walking up to the line of scrimmage with 25 seconds left and then having to change the damn protection, ID the mic, and then possibly, right, change the play and have a kill call, right, in that 25 seconds and then still figure out what the hell I'm going to do. You know, quarterback in the NFL is the toughest position in the entire world, okay? And I'll argue with anybody on that one, anybody.
Yeah. With that being said, Drew, your thoughts on Philip Rivers and that debut he had? What you laugh for?
Well, because Philip's a great quarterback, and God bless him for doing that. I mean, I mean, I know he can't push the ball down the field, and they're going to know it this week too, and they're going to start sitting on him. But I love how he got rid of it. He understands the offense because he's known it. He teaches the same offense, you know, here. He's across the bay coaching high school ball here. Great dude. I mean, great player. And I just hope he just doesn't get just rocked. I just hope he doesn't. I mean, because he just can't – he doesn't move very well. I mean, but he never did, you know. But he was always really cerebral and a really good player. I mean, but, man, that takes a lot of guts to do that because, man, people don't understand. If you have never been on an NFL sideline and seen a game from down on the sideline, you have no damn idea how fast that game is. None. I mean, you think you do, you know, but you don't. I mean, I was down there one time with the Giants when we had Anthony Spencer and DeMarcus Ware on those edges. And, man, I watched Eli. It was vicious. I mean, he had about 2.1 seconds to get rid of that damn ball. Because when you got fire breathers like that, you know, you better know where to go with the ball. So, yeah, I digress. I apologize. Sorry about that.
No, that's why we love you, Drew. That's why
I want to make one little point.
Okay? No, go ahead.
And I hope this gets out, okay? I wish the retarded idiots, okay, on X, okay, that think they know would just shut up, okay? Because – I don't pay you to evaluate. I don't care what you think. Okay. So give me a break. Okay. Just shut up. Okay. I'm not real politically correct, am I? and I apologize for saying retards. I mean, I should not say that. I mean, but.
No, you're good. Hey, Drew, Diego Pavia, y'all invited him? Did y'all invite him? What happened with that?
He accepted.
Okay. Obviously, what happened, didn't win the Heisman, didn't handle it well. I don't know how much you could speak on with that, but whatever you can, your thoughts on
it. I'm not going to speak on it, but he's going to have a lot of questions to answer when he comes down here in interviews, you know? You know, and again, you got to understand when you say something stupid, like I just did just a little bit ago, that there may be ramifications, you know, and, you know, I hope there's not. And I hope people understand that, you know, a salty young man, you know, does make mistakes. And, you know, and I think that he'll have to answer a lot of questions down here. He will.
Yeah. It does feel like, you know, we're getting more and more, you know, not just in social media now, but now there's so many podcasters that are putting on. Puka Nacua just got in trouble the other day, and he said like six dumb things in a row, but he's had to apologize for one of them.
Apologizing up front for what I said.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot to use that word. Okay.
No, I gotcha.
I apologize. I could have used a different word, but you knew where I was coming from.
No, believe me, I know where you're coming from. We've all been in arguments on X before. One-sided arguments of somebody repeatedly telling us how dumb we are. And we're like, man, I'm talking to different people. Trust me. I won't go into it. But I've had conversations with very high up people in the industry and very high up people who have done great jobs coaching. And then I've talked to people very low. And some of them are much meaner about what they think about my opinions. Yeah. So I know how you feel, Drew. I appreciate you. We may have to cut us out of the top of that statement, though, if we put it.
Don't put the statement out there.
You're good, Drew. He is Drew Fabianich, Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl. Hey, Drew, you got anything you want to promote with the Senior Bowl of what y'all got going on?
I'll tell you what, we're about 50% sold out right now.
Nice.
So people, you better get online and you better reserve the tickets. Really quickly, because we're already half capacity already. And you know, it sold out last year. So take advantage of it and make sure that, you know, you understand that there's no other place you can go to watch more draftable players in one place at one time, anywhere. And that's bottom line. So see the future of the NFL in one place.
Yeah. Appreciate you, Drew. Fabiani, Executive Director of the Senior Bowl. Love to talk to you next week. Appreciate you.
We won't be, remember?
Christmas. Yes.
Merry That's Christmas right. to y'all.
Happy holidays, Drew. Appreciate you, man.
All right, see you, brother.
Yeah, man. That's Drew keeping it real with us about, you know, Texas right now. He's, you know, because he's questioning a lot of these decisions being made, Patrick, as he should. Like, he knows Chad Scott on a personal level. And I said it when it happened. Chad Scott, he went Kevin Costner, bodyguard, taking the bullet for Whitney Houston, because we all saw what that offensive line was. And I guess that relationship with Kyle Flood and Steve Sarkisian is way better than what it is with Pete Kwiatkowski, because I would have got rid of Kyle Flood before I got rid of Pete Kwiatkowski. That's for sure. Like,
I mean, if I would have thought
we have to get rid of somebody, that's what I mean.
And two, we all would have thought, okay, what's the biggest gripe been for the last 3 years now of Sark and the argument being had of, is he going to be the play caller or not on the offensive end or being a head coach? So you would have said, well, Kyle Flood is the OC. Well, do you let him go and go get a really big name fish as an OC who could also call plays and work with Sark? Was that something that could have been in the works? Look, we haven't seen the last of it, because in all reality, you expect some of this stuff to happen January 1st through 4th. Some other changes in the coaching staff before you hit that portal. But after the bowl game, you just don't really expect this stuff to happen pre-bowl game. I could believe that PK maybe was listening to other offers, and that could have been something that played into this, that he was at least seeing the writing on the wall, that his job security may not have been as good. And that's why this happened so fast, is that, you know, there's other jobs opening up where he may be interested, not as a head coach, but as a DC somewhere else. Notably USC, I believe, has an open DC position, which puts him back into a position that I feel he probably be more comfortable coaching in. Cause again, I just think that Will Muschamp's just been in the SEC for much longer than PK has. Well, you know, whether or not that makes him a better coordinator or anything else is that's, you know, I'm gonna have to go look more into this. I was not expecting it today.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you jumping on, Patrick. Like, you didn't have to do that. I know you got your show, Matt, you know, a couple hours too. But for the folks who just jumped on, the reason why Patrick's here is because Chip had to go. Breaking news, Pete Kwiatkowski and Dwayne Akina out. Will Muschamp in as the defensive coordinator for the Texas Longhorns. So that happened around what time that happened?
About 45 minutes ago or so, we think.
45 minutes. Yeah. Chip sent that text around. So I say about like 2:30. We'll give it 2:30. Yeah. That happened. And yeah, we've been trying to dissect it ever since. You know, obviously we just talked to Drew about it. And yeah, just sometimes it just doesn't fit. Like, sometimes things could get stale, you know, and I thought the move, Jalen Gilbo moving to the outside, wasn't great. That was kind of a head scratcher for me, you know. I thought Grayson Littleton was really good this year. So that's a big time positive. You know, Kenote Hudson, who is the Nichols coach, what does it mean for him? You know, Kenodo Hudson, excuse me. Like, what does it mean for him? You know, moving forward, because I thought he did a decent job. But as you mentioned earlier, Patrick, there's been a lot of guys opting out and transferring. The Leonga LaFau thing, you had to assume there was more to that, because I thought Leonga LaFau was a guy that would spend his whole Texas tenure there in the state. And for him to leave, that was shocking. And now for Kwiatkowski to leave, it's like, okay, that ain't as shocking as it was a couple of days ago.
No, and I mean, and we look at, like, the LaFau thing, too. We you know, you look at and say, we all thought he was going to be stepping into that role of leadership for when Anthony Hill leaving. But I think that might be part of the PK at the end of the season. Seeing when Michael Taft was out and Anthony Hill was out, how many misaligned defenses there were. How many times the defense just completely busted a play. And, you know, if you're looking at that as a coach on the offensive side of the ball, you go, wait, are our players on the field actually getting our guys in the right spot? Are you as a coach teaching them to be in the right spots? Because it feels like you, without Michael Taft and Anthony Hill, this defense is bad. Like, not okay, but like bad, bad, because of how many times you just watched and there's a tight end and they just don't cover him because someone else wasn't on the field to point it to him. And look, we had that problem with the offensive line as well this year, where it felt like guys were in positions they didn't know what to do. So if we look at that, I think that has to be a bit of the come to Jesus moment that he may have had, where this starts in the rift. We know we've seen these rifts before with coaches. Appreciate you, Namon. But like when we see these rift with coaches, it starts with somebody walking in the room and goes, why the hell is this happening? And once you start defending yourself instead of trying to fix a problem, and again, I don't know if that's completely what happened, but you know, we know that that was, while I was going back, that was a Tom Herman. When Tom Herman started to defend himself instead of fixing the problems, you went, okay, we're ready to move on to a new coach. And so you could see, man, we're starting to leak a lot of water and you're not giving me solutions.
Right, right. And, you know, there's a lot of good, like the development of Michael Taft, that's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
That's what, and again, Michael Taft had a ton to do with that, more than the coaching staff did, but the coaches still have to put you in a place to be successful, to what you were saying. And Michael Taft went from walk-on to All-American. Hell, we just talked to Drew. He's going to be in that Panini Senior Bowl. And there's none but top dogs in that game. So there's a ton of positives that Pete Kwiatkowski did and brought to the table. Hell, David Benda, that one's huge. Like David Benda, he was one of those guys, he was just kind of lost in the fold. And it took him a while, but his last few years, he was really reliable. So that coaching staff, you know, Pete Kwiatkowski, he did a lot of good things, man, but clearly, they can't ignore the big-time flaws and big-time just lapses that happen. Like that Travion Henderson one, you should be in the national championship.
Oh.
Chip brings it up all the time. I can't stand when he brings it up, but I feel like it's appropriate at this time.
It is.
You know, we're trying to figure, like, that's a championship team. The 2024 Texas Longhorns should have been a national championship team. I remember how devastated I was having to do the post-game show that day, just thinking, wow, man, you don't get many opportunities where the roster looks like that and you have a chance to win it and it just squanders through your hands. And that play alone was the reason why. Like, you had all the momentum before that play. And, you know, yesterday I tried to give Pete Kwiatkowski the benefit of the doubt because I've been watching the Patriots this year due to their success. Travion Henderson can ball.
He's a player.
He can ball. That son of a B, he's cold as hell. And the fact that Ohio State had him and Quinshon Judkins, who's doing this thing for the Browns this year, man, Ryan Day, you lucky bastard. But still, that shouldn't be happening. In that situation, that shouldn't be happening. And then this year, even though you went 9-3, Florida game, you're like, what the hell? Just how many times, guys, the miscommunication was there in the Georgia game where Jalen Gilbo and Mookie Taft, one's pointing one way, the other's pointing the other way, and whoop, Gunnar Stockton hits his man wide open down the field, and you get drove in Athens.
Wait, Vanderbilt with what's his name? Eli Stowers.
Yeah.
The one guy they have on that offense that you're like, better watch out for. And he goes unguarded, unwatched, untouched into the end zone on the easiest play in the history of football. And you're like, how did nobody on this field think to go get it? And I agree, this is not simply on PK, it's on the players, but this is part of why you start to look at why he could be. I'll have two questions for you though, Zay. The ones that are popping in my head right now. What's up with Johnny Nansen? Because he's a co-DC. So does he still a co-DC and he's still there in Will Muschamp's world? Or do you lose Nansen? Because Nansen was a huge piece of how much better our defense got when he came on a year ago. Like he helped a lot of things when he came on a year ago. And that some credit goes to PK, but I think some credit goes to Johnny Nansen. So I'm curious if he stays on as a linebackers coach, or that, you know, is he gone in the wind now with a basically recruiting all new linebacking core, except for a few young guys, But we talk about Atkinson, we talk about Elijah Burke and some of these young guys we expect to step up next season, Ty Anthony Smith. You know, if you lose Nansen, who's their coach and their defensive coordinator, that becomes, you know, who are you bringing in to fix that? So that one, and the one I'm still, I don't know who's wearing the green dot in the Citrus Bowl for this defense right now. I've been asking this for a few days now. But that's like, is it Ty Anthony Smith? Ty Anthony Smith lined up wrong 20 times this season. Like, I think he's a great player, but I don't know if he's the leader of the team. I mean, like, is he de facto guy? Yeah, if McDonald plays, is it Jelani?
Yeah, this was his see ball, get ball season. The game and, you know, calling shots. That's the next part for Ty Anthony Smith. But yeah, I don't think you have a choice there, Badrick. Like, you look at this roster, Barry Sarkisian. Like, you got to
you go, it's Jelani is the one that you would go is most experienced as it. He's just too far back. So can he be the green dot and call the plays from the safety position? Because he'd be the most ready to do it. But I don't know. If you want to do a linebacker, it has to be Ty Anthony Smith. But now you're also talking with Will Muschamp as opposed to the guy that you played with, you got to coach all year.
Right, right. And, yeah, as far as Johnny Nansen, I guess that depends on the leverage that Will Muschamp has. And does Will Muschamp and Steve Sarkisian, can they agree on if Will Muschamp wants his guys that he could bring in that Sark could be cool with? Or is Sark letting them know, like, hey, you getting this job, cool, but I'm keeping some of these guys.
Yeah.
Like, you should keep Kenny Baker. You should keep Alec Clark. Those guys need to be kept. Everybody else, I really don't. Even Johnny Nansen, I'm like, I don't know. Just for some comfort, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's tough. Like, again, you would hope that they had this all, Steve Sarkisian, Chris Del Conte, everybody had this thought through. Like, this wasn't just out the blue.
Again, they sent out a press release that – I mean, you got on the show here, we got Chip Brown, who is one of the best reporters out there for Texas, and he's caught off guard.
Chip, like,
I mean, I'm looking on the line. You look on Twitter and you see ex-players, you see everybody being shocked about it. So they did all of this. So there could still be plenty of moves in there where they're waiting to get the next guy and saying, well, we're not going to say this guy's fired until we know who we got to replace them, because we don't want that down period. In between. But no, it does feel like this is a much more aggressive. Also, you can say they've made two coaching hires so far, Zay. Both coaches last season were with teams that beat us. Jamar Jaluk from Florida and Will Muschamp was from Georgia. Will Muschamp was with Georgia last year as an analyst. He was their DC and then moved to an analyst. So I'm just saying, like, they went out and said, we're going to go look at the schools that beat us and go figure out why they beat us and try and take away their best pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy times, man. Like, and then again, was this Sark's decision? Was this the higher ups above him? Was it their decision when they were like, yo, you have to make some serious moves and we're going to point to where we want those moves to go. We're not saying do it, but we're just going to point.
And yeah, but that feels like, man, it's Kyle Flood. Like, that is
Kyle Flood and Pete Kowski were both in the area that they were pointing to. One of them, something, because that's where I'm at too, Patrick. Like, Kyle Flood's the dude. If we have to get rid of one of the coordinators, Kyle Flood's the dude. I think Jeff Banks' responsibility is a lot, too. Because 1 year, the tight end's good, and then the special team sucks. Or another year, the special teams is good, and the tight ends aren't that good. Which I know it was a trickle-down effect due to the offensive line. They had to bring Max Protect. I get all that, but still, the tight ends this year, from going from JT Sanders and Gunnar Helm to what I saw, got to be better there. Ryan Niblett saved the day for my man Jeff Banks. He did everything. You good with special teams because of Ryan Niblett. So Jeff Banks is cool. We ain't worried about him. Yeah. But Kyle Flood, there's zero excuse.
But also, Jeff Banks is a hell of a recruiter.
For sure.
And he gets that. And Chad Scott, I know Drew's a big fan of his, but his recruiting for Texas was not as where it needed to be. At least that's how some people felt. I'll say some people felt that his recruiting was not where it needed to be. And his retention was definitely not where it needed to be because what, he's got three guys gone already from there. So that part of it is there. And for PK, again, you look at the opt-outs, you look at the guys going pro, you look at maybe the draft stock of those guys not being where they were, where Anthony Hill now is projected as a second round pick, not a first round pick, which is insane. Whoever gets Anthony Hill is getting the biggest steal of the draft right now, because that dude is going to be insane in the NFL. But looking at it that way, you may say you really knocked down some stock of some dudes because we played so backwards. And this could have been that PK does want to go back somewhere else and wasn't as happy his last year there. You know, sometimes these are attitude decisions. And, you know, you're walking in and once you can't walk into the practice every morning and be upbeat and ready to go and get your guys in the right spot. And whether that is he's got too many guys that aren't his guys, like Dwayne Aquina, who's also gone now, but Johnny Nansen, if they're not PK guys, so he's getting, you know, whatever all the reasons could be, that you could find a reason why this was a decision made right now. But if we look at Kyle Flood, unless I'm Kyle Flood and I've been told by both CDC and by Sark that my job is safe, I've got to go bag ready. I've got to go bag ready.
Ready, just ready to go, just in case, huh?
Ready. I got to go bag ready. I'm like, hey, I don't know. They just got rid of PK. I thought we were good. Hey, yeah, man, we worked. We worked at the horn, and we know sometimes you need that go bag ready.
Yeah,
some days it comes down.
Yeah, definitely at that place for sure. Yeah. I shocked, man. Shocked. Pete Kwiatkowski out. Right before Christmas.
Hey, he got a job. Hey, you tell me right now that Lincoln Riley, that's not the first phone call I make. The second I see that, if I'm Lincoln Riley, I'm calling PK.
Who was Lincoln Riley's DC last year? And what happened? Like, where's that? Because, yeah, like, whoever it was, Pete Kwiatkowski's better than that person. But, like, Pete Kwiatkowski's going to get a gig quick.
D'Anton Lynn?
Yeah, I know who that is.
He was from UCLA before that.
Okay. Well, God bless that dude, but
Yeah,
Muschamp. I like Muschamp now because he was with Georgia and them. Anything that Kirby Smart's out here doing, Glenn Schumann, like, and Muschamp was a big part of their success too. Like, he was a part of that. He was in there. He just didn't get the credit like those two did. So just taking up all that game, man. And when your time has come again, like, wait for that opportunity. The best opportunity, like Texas, going back to Texas with everything that he's learned, everything that he's gone through. Again, you don't have to be a great head coach to be a great coordinator. Like, sometimes people look at the two and they're like, oh, look what he did as a head coach. It's not the same. The responsibilities, everything that you just have to take on as a head coach, it ain't even close to that as a DC. Like, Sark has to deal with all that BS stuff and talking, having the separate phones and stuff like that. Like, as a DC, you probably need a separate phone for recruiting and your family, but you don't got to talk to the boosters like that. So when he was at Florida, like, that was, you're coming in after Urban at Florida. Oh, it's tough coming in after the guy that had a lot of success. Will Muschamp, he wasn't ready then. So now, and he might not ever have been ready for that, be a head coach, and that's okay. It don't mean that he don't know what the hell he's talking about, or it's not going to click as a DC where he's had success. We've seen it live, up close and personal, have success as a defensive coordinator. So just hopefully it's not like the Dwayne Aquina situation, which, again, Patrick, I heard from multiple sources that Dwayne Aquina the style that he was coaching, he felt like he couldn't coach like he used to because the players, they can't take that. They have to be coddled, and it's just a different generation. And that hard ass Bob Knight style of coaching, you get canceled quick doing stuff like that.
You do.
So no, Aaron Ross, Mike Griffin, Cedric Griffin, Mike Huff, all those dudes, they could take that type of coaching.
Rod Babers,
come on, man. Who are we talking about here?
Yeah. No, like, I mean, Rod used to say that he used to go in and in the meeting room, they would have their desk lined up and with your name on your desk. And then some days you'd walk in and the desk would be moved or your name would be moved and you wouldn't be in the front anymore. He'd be like, nope, you got passed. And you're like, well, you do that now. And they're calling NIL and they're calling everybody else. You're like, you just can't, like, as silly as that is, it's a different coaching style now.
Yeah. So what do you want from Dwayne Aquino? Like, of course he can't relate, which is part on him, because he has to be able to adjust. But they were baking that they were getting the same Dwayne Aquino. And that's just not possible. It's not possible. Like, if y'all want that same Dwayne Aquino, he would have been canceled in early September. You know what I'm saying? Because he just can't coach.
Yeah, there would have been an apology letter and all that already put out. Yeah.
Yeah, like the style that we love Dwayne Aquino for, that no longer exists.
Yeah.
Because it can't happen. It just can't, which sucks. I hate that we've gotten that soft. Some of it was out of pocket. Like, I don't want you choking or throwing chairs at folks, Bob Knight style. A lot of that was out of pocket. But we got to find that middle ground. You know what I'm saying? You got to find that middle ground. And that's, again, that's on the player that you recruit. Like, you got to recruit guys like that, that they might be 3 stars, 2 stars, got it from the mud. You know, some of these 4 or 5 stars, they come in entitled. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have no entitlement in your locker room because now the main thing ain't the main thing anymore. And I feel like a lot of these schools around the country are dealing with that.
Yeah. I'll throw in a note that I'm just looking at Will Muschamp's work history. Since 2001, other than this Texas run for 2 seasons and being the Dolphins for a season, he's been on SEC teams. From LSU to Auburn to Florida to South Carolina to Georgia. He's been in the SEC for a while. And I think that's one of those things that, you know, as much as we're always labeled SEC homers and everything else by people from other conferences, you're like, the style of play is different. The level of play, the dudes you're getting in there are different guys. You're recruiting different areas. You're getting a lot more Florida, Georgia players now than PK's ever coached before. So there may be something where, you know, you just feel, well, Muschamp's going to work better with that style of player and that style of play. You feel this is the better way to move forward. And, you know, how much of this was they decided to fire PK a month ago, and then they had to find Will Muschamp, find whoever they were going to hire, bring him in, or they made this all decision, saw Will Muschamp was available, and they've liked Will Muschamp. Again, I'll say with Jabbar Jalouk, you know, the Chad Scott thing was, I remember going over that and they had like 3 or 4 names on that list and he was 4th. And he's a good hire because it's Texas and your 4th name is still better than a lot of other teams first, but you're still like, they were never, that was never the guy they really wanted. And maybe they showed that too much and Chad Scott's attitude wasn't perfect because he knows Neil Brown also gone as an analyst. Yeah. He took the North Texas job. So there's just a lot of things that happened in there. Zay, would you assume before the transfer portal that we get at least one other big coaching change, or are we getting are we talking Kyle Flood level? Are we talking maybe Chris Jackson level? Are we talking maybe just hiring some support staff?
Yeah, I would say it would be around the Johnny Nansen, Chris Jackson level if someone else were to get the boot. Like, hey, you. But again, just never know at this point. Like, I'm flabbergasted at what's happened today. You know what I'm saying? And here's Steve Sarkisian's actual, you know, statement on the firing of Pete Kwiatkowski. Sark says, we appreciate all that Pete Kwiatkowski has done for the program in his 5 years coordinating our defense and are grateful for Dwayne Aquino's efforts in returning to the program this past year. They are both tremendous coaches and people that work extremely hard for Texas football and the players they coached. We have had a great deal of success and thankful for the roles they played and that we wish them the best. But at this time, we just felt it was the best for our program to move in a different direction. And having that opportunity to hire Will Muschamp provides us the leadership to take our defense to another level. Will is a guy I've known for a long time, always admired, and is as good of a defensive mind and coach as I've ever coached against. His defenses are relentless. He absolutely gets the best of his staff and players and is such an extremely well-respected coach. I know Longhorn Nation knows him well. He led some incredible defenses here at the 40, and I'm so fired up to bring him back at Texas. He'll be an awesome addition to our staff. So, yeah, very high words for Will Muschamp from Steve Sarkisian. And, yeah, just crazy. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's a shocking move of, really, when you think you're going to get that left, the left jab, and you just right uppercut. We were like, oh, well, Kyle Flood, maybe. I think he's probably going to keep him, and maybe Chris Jackson will be gone, and they'll move around some pieces. We all kind of assumed Dwayne Aquino that it just wasn't working out the way the secondary didn't progress. So once we get that, I it feels like, all right, now we don't know. Now it does feel maybe – the panic that a lot of people felt, or the anger people felt at the end of the season by not making the playoffs, and felt that it wasn't reciprocated within the program, where we saw some people feel that Sark really did not appreciate how angry they were. It feels like there are repercussions for not making the playoffs, and the standard is the standard of what they want to be and where they want to be and trying to make the playoffs. And that loss to Florida, that's the one they're going to look at and go, you let Noah Leota, Florida team, and DJ Lagway, who couldn't do anything all season, torch us? Your defense couldn't tackle Dallas or whatever the guy's name. You couldn't tackle him. Dallas Wilson. You couldn't tackle him. Like, all right, it's going to be a problem. Like, coach, great against Ohio State. Defense, great against Ohio State. Defense, I mean, maybe they got rid of him because Colin Klein left A&M and they went, fine, well, main reason we were keeping you is because you own Colin Klein.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. And I said on these airwaves, when Texas Tech, A&M, and Oklahoma make the college football playoff and you don't, it's bad year. It's a bad year. That's why I call this year a disappointment. Say what you want about 9-3, and I might change my tone on that depending on how OU and them and Texas Tech does in the college football playoff. But overall, they still made it, and Texas did not. So there's a lot more people that are going to panic from that than you would assume. And this seems like that type of panic to make a move like this. This is a very drastic move, and yeah, we'll keep talking about it. Matt will be on with Patrick in a couple of minutes to keep on discussing Pete Kwiatkowski and Dwayne Aquino. I got to go Vince McMahon on this one. Fired! And my man, Will Muschamp coming in. Wow. Yeah, crazy, crazy times on the 40. But let's get to one of these sponsors before I get to the right call and get out of here. Shout out to Covert BK, family-owned and operated, doing it for 100 years. Covert BK is the best. If you don't want to take my word for how great Covert BK is, listen to these five folks of Covert BK.
You see Covert everywhere. It's that personal level of just feeling like it's a personal family interaction.
The customer service, it's impeccable. It's unlike anything I've ever experienced buying a car. over the 30 years that I've been buying cars from them, I feel like I know them and they know me.
Covert's done an amazing job of making me feel valued. If you purchase a vehicle and you want to feel like you're part of a family, join the Covert family.
Come and experience it for yourself.
Covert, born and raised in Austin.
Nobody beats a Covert deal. Not now, not ever. All right, so we briefly talked about Puka Nacua. You know, bring this up in the right call. Puka Nacua was on a streamer's site. They were streaming. The streamer brought up some gesture that was apparently anti-Semitic. And Puka Nacua said he was going to celebrate doing that on the field. And he scored a touchdown and then did it on the stream. Again, offensive. So much so, I didn't even know what it was, to be honest. So I didn't either. I saw it. I was like, I don't know what that means. But, hey, don't be mad at me. Like, Puka Nacua did it, and you have to apologize for it. So he did that. But he's also in the headlines for the wrong reasons, Patrick, because apparently his brother's a nut job. His brother allegedly and another dude stole the car of NBA players Adu Deroz, who was at Arkansas last year, his SUV without his consent, and got arrested for it. So this is a weird story. Like, does he know Adu Deroz? Like, did he just do it like as a joke but without telling him? And then Thero is like, this ain't no joke, or are these fools really on their Grand Theft Auto and just out here taking cars and stuff? But it's weird that it's Puka Nacua's brother who's been in the UFL and he's played football. You know, he's had a career kind of, obviously not as good as bro, but there's this clip here of him slapping the hell out of a fan at one of the UFL games, man. And anybody getting slapped, I'm gonna laugh. Like, damn, this dude's trouble. And you mentioned earlier when we were talking to Drew, Puka Nacua, he was on the streaming service talking crazy, saying a whole bunch of stuff that he shouldn't be saying, talking about the refs, you know what I'm saying, talking about the Jags being the most overrated team. Just things as a player you shouldn't be saying, but...
Said Julio Jones, greatest receiver of all time.
I mean, I'm cool with that.
I'm not. Jerry Rice. There's one right answer. It's Jerry Rice. There's one right answer.
Let's see Jerry Rice. I'll give him
I don't care. There's still one right answer.
I let the youngsters throw their goats out there. If they feel like someone's a goat that might not be the goat to me, who am I to say, you know, what y'all, that they're messing up with their goat decisions and conversations. And stuff. But
the refs are out there making calls just so they can be seen on TV. He also said, I can't afford to live in LA on $1 million.
Oh my gosh.
While he also has a like solid gold plated box with a glass panel in it that he carries his cleats in to the game.
That's what I'm saying. Like, these guys, you can afford it. You just want to live a lavish lifestyle. Why do they get, that's what I'm confused on. Like, they want to live above their means because that's what everyone pictures. You know what I'm saying? Everybody pictures the status being so extravagant when really guys go broke all the time. Yeah. So I hate when they say stuff like that. It's so ignorant. Like Odell Beckham Jr., he was like $100 million. Don't really go as far as it used to. What?
He's right. That's also an insane thing to say. If you gave me $100 million, or you, then we're good.
Yeah, I'm great. Good.
Man, I bought myself a house.
Yeah,
I have enough money put away, invested, that just pays a property tax on that thing every year. My bills. I sit and I go and hang out with my friends, and the most money I spend is when I'm like, guys, we're going all out. I'm getting the big bottle of Jack tonight. That's all. That's all the difference.
Right? That's what I'm saying. It's that easy. It's that easy. These guys, man, these Instagram models, they got them messed up. They got them messed up. Screw them Instagram models. Oh, Stacy, that's a six, would do everything in the bedroom that Tanya, the Instagram model with 5 million followers, will do too. And she's a lot less expensive. But the status, I need the Instagram model. She's so bad. She looks so good. She got that fake booty, and it's crazy. I need it.
Oh, dude, I can't wait till we see Diego Pavia just throwing it away. Everything he made at Vanderbilt just gone in a year to Instagram models.
That's going to be sad, man. That's going to be sad. Patrick, I appreciate you, man, jumping in just out the blue. Chip, we'll be back tomorrow to break down Pete Kwiatkowski, Dwayne Aquina firing. But till then, open gym. My man Matt jumping on. Matt, what's up, man?
I just popped into the waiting room when Zay was talking about Instagram models and big booties and stuff, so I was a little bit caught off guard. But hey, that's a way to start the show, baby. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm just trying to let these athletes know, Matt, they don't need that.
They absolutely do that.
Like, there's nice, wholesome, church-going women everywhere that would love to have an athlete that you could just stay at home with, that you're not buying $50,000 Birkin bags for, and you paying for they weave every other weekend, and it's a lot. Well,
who is the genesis of this conversation? I missed the beginning of that.
I don't know how we got here, Patrick. Puka?
Okay, well, how old is Puka Nacua? How old are most of these athletes who are making these decisions?
Like 25.
They're 24, 25 years old. I know that I wasn't the best judge of those kinds of things when I was that age. So, you know, it is what it is. Hey, once they figure out, you know, think what is really important about a relationship later in life, they will find the right person.
Yeah. Puka Nacua also said in his interview, he'll never get married. Women are only coming after you for your money.
See, there he is.
He's already got a baby mama coming after him.
Yep. See, he learned, Matt. He learned.
Already got it.
See, he learned. It was too late. The advice that I'm giving Puka, it's too late. And now he has to learn the hard way in California, nonetheless. Lord. Appreciate you guys, man.
Appreciate you.
Patrick, appreciate you, man. Be back tomorrow. You.